Thanks for tuning in to the Drive On Podcast, where we talk about issues affecting veterans after they get out of the military. Before we get started, I'd like to ask a favor. If you haven't done so already, please rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts. If you've already done that, thank you. These ratings help the show get discovered so it can reach a wider audience. And while you're there, click the subscribe button so that you get notified of new episodes as soon as they come out. If you don't use Apple Podcasts, you can visit driveonpodcast.com/subscribe to find other ways of subscribing, including our email list. I'm your host, Scott DeLuzio, and now let's get on with the show. Everybody, today I want to do another solo episode. It's been a while since I've done one of these. Don't worry though, I have a bunch of great guests lined up over the coming weeks, so we'll get back to hearing their stories next week. Actually, I've only got a few more episodes looking at the calendar here to round out the second year of this podcast, which will be in the beginning of June, so I'm pretty excited about that, actually. Anyway, today I want to talk about disability benefits from the VA, or for service-connected conditions. I'm a member of several veteran-related Facebook groups, and I keep seeing some of the same questions over and over again from veterans about their disability ratings. How to apply for the rating, why the math of a rating change doesn't seem to make any sense, and a number of other things. So I figured I'd use this episode to unravel some of the mysteries behind VA disability claims as best as I can, because let's be honest, it's all a bit of a mystery, even if you've gone through the process before. Okay, so first, I want to talk about who these claims are for. If you served, it doesn't matter if you were active duty, reserves, National Guard, or if you were in basic training at the time of a service-connected injury or illness. If you served and got sick or injured while serving, had a pre-existing condition that got worse by your service, or a disability related to your service that didn't appear until after your service ended, you very likely at that point could have a valid VA disability claim. You also generally have to have had an honorable discharge unless you can get that discharge reviewed and upgraded. There's a whole process for that, which I'm not familiar with, so I'm not going to go into that right now, but it is possible. Now, a lot of people will say that they won't apply for a rating because they say something like, I don't want to take it away from somebody else who really needs it. Or, I didn't get blown up by an IED, so I don't deserve it. That's a bunch of crap. Anyone who has any condition that developed during their service should apply for their disability rating. You're not taking it away from someone if you apply. The only person you're taking it away from is yourself if you don't apply. The whole idea behind disability benefits is that, well, first off, you're not going to get rich off of it. At most, even if you're rated at 100%, you're looking at a little over $3,000 a month for 100% rating. So depending on how many kids you have and if you're married, that number will vary. But ballpark, $3,000 something a month. The idea behind the disability payment is that it will compensate you for the condition you sustained while serving. The whatever disabling condition that happened. This can offset lost wages or other expenses while getting treatment for your condition. If you can't work due to your condition, it can offer you a basic level of income, which helps ease the burden of the condition that you develop during your service. Again, you're not going to get rich off of VA disability. If you're not 100% rated, it should be able to offset some lost wages while you get treatment for your condition. For example, if you get rated for, let's say, PTSD, you'll likely find yourself taking time to go to appointments with a psychologist. And this could take time away from work, right? Because a lot of the psychologists work during normal business hours, and that might be when you have to work. And that might result in lost wages. The VA rating helps by making up some or all of those lost wages. But it isn't a system where you submit for specific lost wages. So you're not going to say, okay, well, this week I got docked X amount in pay, and so the VA is going to pay you back, you know, a certain amount. They don't care what your paycheck normally would look like. That's not factored into the calculation at all. If you're rated at a certain percentage, the VA compensates you based on that percentage. So it may or may not cover all of your lost wages. And if you're worried about taking the benefits away from someone else, or you just don't deserve it, these ratings aren't always permanent anyways. So in the PTSD example, if you may get reevaluated a few years after your initial rating, and your rating could get lowered or brought down to zero, depending on your progress, really. And in other cases, the rating may be permanent, such as if you have an irreversible condition, excuse me. Something where you might have lost a limb or something like that. That may be a permanent condition. So, what conditions are eligible for compensation? There's way more than I care to list off in this episode, probably way more than you care to listen to in this episode. There's over 800 disabilities, I think, that are eligible, and you can find them, I believe, on the eBenefits website, which, if you don't have an account there on eBenefits, I think it's pretty simple to get set up with that. Or you can go to your local VA and they should be able to help you with that. Anyways, things like chronic or long-lasting back pain, breathing problems, severe hearing loss, tinnitus, scar tissue from a service-related injury, range of motion injuries, like if you can't lift your arm up above your head, for example, ulcers, cancers, TBI, PTSD, depression, and anxiety are probably some of the more common issues that service members might face. That's obviously not an exhaustive, complete list of everything. And also, just because you have one of these conditions doesn't mean you'll instantly be approved to receive compensation. You're going to have to prove that it was connected to something that happened to you in your service. So, if you have a TBI, a brain injury, doesn't necessarily mean that you're automatically going to get approved for this, because if it was from something that happened after you got out of the service, like you were in a car accident or something like that, then you're not going to get VA compensation for that, because that's not related to your service. But that leads me to my next point, which is, if you are still serving, get everything documented. I know you may not want to go to sick call. It may make you look weak or like you're shamming. E4s with your sham shields, you have no excuse here. But everyone else, get your butt out there and get your conditions documented. Everything. When you're applying for a rating, one of the things that you'll need to do is prove that the condition developed or got worse during your service. It's pretty hard without a time machine to go back in time to do that, unless you get it documented while you're still in service. Even things that you don't think are a big deal at the time, like a weird cough that you developed while you're deployed, that could be evidence of lung cancer from breathing in toxic fumes coming off of the burn pit on your base. Or the ringing in your ears a day after a day at the range because your ear probe didn't fit right. Speaking from personal experience here, I've had the same ringing in my ears for over a decade now. In my case, it'll be there for the rest of my life unless some medical science miracle comes up with some cure. Regardless, no matter what the condition is, go talk to your doc and get it documented. In my case, I ended up applying long after I got out of the military, in less than ideal conditions here. I was actually told by someone when I was still in that tinnitus just isn't covered by the VA, and neither is hearing loss. Neither of those are true. So I just never bothered. I also wasn't diagnosed with PTSD until well after getting out of the military. So I only recently applied for those, even though I've been out since 2011, so almost 10 years now. While the tinnitus was documented to some extent, it wasn't documented all that well, since only really my hearing loss was really documented. I did have a couple things working in my favor, though. Since I had an MOS as an infantryman, where it was likely that I would come in contact with loud noises, the VA just assumed that it was as likely as not that my tinnitus developed during my service. And similarly for my PTSD, I had zero documentation while I was serving because I avoided mental health like it was a plague. However, since I deployed and was awarded a CIB, other branches might have other combat badges or ribbons or things like that. Because I was in combat, they assumed that the PTSD was, again, at least as likely as not that it developed during my service versus from some other unrelated tragic event that took place. So I didn't have the most ideal package as far as documentation goes. But the reason I shared my situation is because I don't want people to get totally discouraged either if you don't have anything documented. It's still possible to receive a rating even if you never had anything documented. It's harder, but still possible. So, okay, document everything. If you're out now and never had anything documented, you're not totally screwed, but you're probably going to do a little bit more work to get the documentation set up. The VA does accept what they call buddy statements, which are written by people who are close to you that can attest to the impact your condition has on you. If you can have any battle buddies that serve with you, who are with you when you got injured, you can ask them to write a buddy statement describing the incident, and even better, how it has impacted you in your day-to-day life, if they can attest to that as well. You know, if you see them on a regular basis, they might be able to talk about how it affects your mobility and other things like that. Before you apply, you will want to make sure that you have all the evidence that you can gather on your condition first, before you actually submit the final application for this. This includes things like private medical records from your doctor, x-rays, MRIs, test results, lab results, things like that. These records can come from a civilian doctor, a non-VA hospital, or some other treatment center. If you don't have any of this, it's okay. A civilian doctor report isn't required. You don't have to go out and make an appointment to that, but it can help if your military medical record is incomplete. You can make an appointment with your doctor to get an exam and ask them to provide you with any reports or results to include with your claims. We already talked about the medical records from when you served in the military. When I was in, I would make copies of any new piece of paper that was added to my medical file. Then I took that paper and I kept it in a file at home, in a safe place, so that no matter what schmuck was handling my official medical file, I'd always have a copy of it. If you were injured in a deployment, there's likely a mission report or an incident report or something along those lines. Get your hands on that if you can. If you receive treatment from the VA, you can log into your eBenefits account and download everything that they have on you. Get all of it, all the documentation you could possibly find. Put together those buddy statements. Go ask your friends, your family, you know, all that stuff that I talked about earlier. The VA says that you can submit letters from family members, from friends, clergy members, law enforcement, or those that you served with that can tell more about your condition and how and when it happened and anything like that. So, you know, go talk to people and get them to help you out with those buddy statements. Now that you have all that information, you will want to file what's called a fully developed disability claim. That basically means that you're basically telling the VA, I'm submitting everything that the VA should need in order to determine whether or not to provide the disability rating to approve it. At this point, you're not requesting any additional exams or for the VA to dig any further to determine your eligibility. They're not looking into any other records other than what it is that you're providing them. Now, I recommend this because if you're relying on someone else, like the VA, to dig into the records for you, it's very possible that they won't find what they're looking for. And they may determine that the claim shouldn't be approved because the evidence just wasn't there. Now, personally, I'd rather know for sure what information they're working off of. I'd like to know everything that they have and have copies of all of that stuff. And there isn't any risk to doing it this way, because if the VA determines that they need other records to make a decision, they'll just change the status of the claim from a fully developed claim to a standard claim and then continue processing it as if it's any other claim, and they can assist with digging up any of that other information. So it really doesn't hurt to do it this way, and it can be processed much faster this way too. Once when you start a fully developed claim, you do have up to 1 year to complete it. This should give you plenty of time to get appointments if you need them, buddy statements together from other people, and gather documentation from other doctors and things like that if you need it. When you submit your claim, if it's approved, you'll be paid back to the day that you filed your intent to file. So for example, if you started the claim today, and you started that intent to file today, and you don't actually file it for another year, so that's 12 months, right? Then the VA takes a couple more months, 2 months to approve your claim. So that's now a total of 14 months from the start of all of this. So 14 months now in total. For simple numbers, let's just say you're approved by the VA to get $1,000 per month. That's just a made up number that there's no rating that gives you exactly $1,000 per month, but we're doing easy math here. When your claim ends up getting approved, you're going to end up getting a lump sum of $14,000 since it was 14 months since the start of your claim. So that $1,000 monthly payment would come to you in one lump sum of $14,000. Plus, you'll have $1,000 per month for every month after that going forward. So the earlier you start your claim, the better off it is for you, as long as you think you can complete it within a year. Now, after you submit your claim, the VA may reach out to you to schedule what they call a compensation and pension, or CNP, exam. This exam helps them rate your disability. Basically, they're looking to see how severe your disability is, which affects the amount of compensation you'll receive. Not everyone will have to have a CNP exam, but it's possible that they will reach out for you to have this exam. Also, the CNP exam may be done by the VA at a VA facility, or by a non-VA provider elsewhere that they contract with. So the VA does contract with third-party providers that can do these exams, and I think that's just in an effort to be a little more efficient with processing these claims. Your own doctor even can do the exam too, if they are provided with the necessary forms, which you can get from the VA's website. Now, assuming you went through the whole process to file your claim, you went to the CNP exam, and the VA does determine that you should receive a rating, you'll get a letter in the mail describing their decision and how much your rating is. Assuming you agree with their decision, you'll want to set up a direct deposit with your bank, so the money hits your bank account right away when it's paid out. The other alternative is to get a check each month in the mail, which could come a little bit later than the direct deposit would, and it has a possibility of getting lost in the mail. If you're only rated for one condition, the math as far as like figuring out what your rating is pretty straightforward. So if you're rated at 10, 30, 50, 70%, whatever, that's it. There's nothing more to figure it out. That's your rating. If you're rated at 50, it's 50. That's it. However, if you have multiple ratings for several conditions, that's where things start to get a little fuzzy. The VA is notorious for using some funky math to calculate a total rating for vets with multiple ratings. For example, someone with two conditions that are both rated at 50% doesn't have a 100% rating, which simple math would tell you that 50 plus 50 does equal 100, but not in VA world. They'd actually have a 75% rating, which is not the end of the story, because that also gets rounded up to the nearest 10%, which is 80%. So two 50% ratings would give someone 80% disability. It actually does make some sense, but you have to forget pretty much everything about math that you ever learned in grade school. The VA, I'm going to kind of just go over the VA math real quick just to see if this helps clarify anything for people. Maybe it will, maybe it won't, but I'm going to try anyways. So the VA assumes that if you don't have a rating, then you are 100% healthy. So maybe you never filed for anything, you're 100% healthy. Or you filed and it was declined for some reason, they assume that you're just 100% healthy. You can't be more than 100% healthy, just like you can't be more than 100% unhealthy. There's only one of you, which can only be 100%. So if you have three 50% ratings, you can't be rated at 150%. That just isn't how it works. So in that example of someone with two 50% ratings, the first rating is applied to a 100% healthy person. So 50% of 100 is 50. That's pretty straightforward math. That first rating gives that individual a 50% rating, which means that the person is no longer 100% healthy. They're now, by the VA, they're considered to be only 50% healthy. Pretty straightforward, I think, so far, right? It gets a little wonky when you apply new ratings to that person. Any new rating will be applied against the remaining healthy portion of that person, which in this case is 50%. So the new 50% rating is where things get funky here. So the second rating is applied to a 50% healthy person, not 100% anymore. So since the VA already determined that person is no longer 100% healthy, so we have to take 50% of the remaining 50% healthy person that's still left. So 50% of 50 gives us 25. So that 25 is how unhealthy this new condition made the remaining 50% healthy portion of this person. So this person's combined rating would be 75%, because the 50 plus 25 gives you 75. But wait, there's one more step. The VA rounds all the ratings to the nearest 10%. So in this case, the veteran's rating is 80%. It gets harder and harder to increase your rating the higher you are rated. If that same person was rated 50% for a third condition, their total rating would only increase to 90%. Doing the math, the person is only, they only have 25% healthy portion of them remaining now. So 50% times that remaining 25 gives us 12.5. Add that to the 75% unhealthy portion of this person, and it gives us a combined rating of 87.5%, and this gets rounded up to 90. VA math is just weird, isn't it? But hopefully that clears up how this works. If not, don't worry about it. The VA does have a ratings table, which is about as clear as mud. There are a few good online rating calculators out there, which I'll try to link to in the show notes so you can see how that works. Okay, now anyone listening to this should probably apply for a migraine rating after trying to figure out all that math. Just kidding, don't do that. That's not going to get approved. It's just going to waste everyone's time. Anyway, after getting your rating, if you happen to notice that the condition has worsened over time, you can apply for an increased claim. These ratings aren't static, meaning that once a decision is made, it can be changed. So since you're rated for the disability, it's already been determined that it is service-connected, and now you've noticed that it's since gotten worse, so you can apply to have your rating increased in this case. In my case, it was determined that my hearing loss, which I do have, was service-connected, but it wasn't bad enough for me to be compensated for it. So I am rated at 0% for hearing loss right now. Now, if that hearing gets worse over time, I can apply for an increase. And since it was already determined to be service-connected, it's more likely for me to get that increase. You may also have a secondary service-connected claim. This could be for something like arthritis that was caused by a service-connected knee injury, or maybe migraines that you developed after being rated for a TBI. This type of claim is similar to any other claim that you'll, in the sense that you'll need to provide documentation such as medical records and things like that. You'll also want to get a doctor to sign off that this secondary condition exists because of the original service-connected condition that you were rated for. Again, as a, let's say, 35-year-old, you probably wouldn't expect that you would develop arthritis at such a young age. So if you had a service-connected knee injury, it's pretty likely that the knee injury caused the arthritis to develop, and that would be a pretty good case for a secondary service-connected claim. If, on the other hand, your initial claim was denied, you can file what's called a supplemental claim, which provides the VA with new evidence to support your claim. Maybe you had a test that was done after you filed the original claim, or after it got denied, and this test has more conclusive evidence than what you originally submitted. It may make sense to file a supplemental claim after it was denied. Again, ratings and decisions can be changed, so it isn't the end of the world if you are denied initially. These things change all the time. Now, if you received a rating and you disagree with the rating, you can also appeal the VA's decision too. So all hope is not lost there. However, at this point, you may want to work with someone who knows the process, who can make sure that you have all your T's crossed and your I's dotted and the paperwork's in line and everything that you need is in order. Personally, I never worked with anyone else while filing my claims. I did reach out to a few veteran service organizations, or VSOs for short, and I never really got much help from them, so I figured I'd just wing it and see how it went, which worked out fine for me, luckily. In all honesty, though, I'm not bad-mouthing the VSOs. I'm not trying to talk down on them at all. I just never really pressed them for the help either. I reached out to them. It seemed like it was more work than it was worth to explain my situation to them than it was to just file it on my own. So if I was a little more persistent and I reached out to them a little bit better, I may have gotten some better help from them. I just thought I could figure it out on my own. So I did that. But I can totally see how that might not be the case for everyone, and it could be very useful for other people. So that's definitely an option. But before I go too far with VSOs and others who can help you out, I should mention why you may disagree with a rating. I started talking about that you may disagree with a rating that you get. The VA is not looking for the fact that you disagree for some reason, like my buddy and I were deployed to the same location and we went out on every mission together, we saw all the same stuff, we took part in the same firefights and all that kind of stuff, and he got a 50% rating for PTSD and I only got 10%. So I disagree with my rating because I think I deserve the same as him. That's not going to cut it. The VA uses guidelines for each condition, and a specific rating is assigned to each condition based on the severity of that condition. So your friend who's rated 50% for PTSD may have more severe symptoms than you do, so he got rated higher. And I won't go through all the possible conditions and ratings because there are hundreds or thousands of combinations of conditions. I will put a link to a resource in the show notes that has a number of tables based on the conditions that you can read through and find your condition in that list and see what the criteria for the various ratings are. Just as a quick example, mental disorders like PTSD can be rated at either 0, 10, 30, 50, 70, or 100%. Those are the only possibilities there. So using that example before where your friend is rated at 50% and you're rated at 10%, the guideline for 50% says that if you're suffering from a mental health condition, you could get rated at 50% if you have occupational and social impairment with reduced reliability and productivity due to a variety of symptoms. I'm not going to read through all the different symptoms, but things like panic attacks and different kind of speech patterns, difficulty understanding complex commands, impairment of short and long-term memory, impaired judgment, impaired abstract thinking, disturbances of motivation and mood, difficulty in establishing and maintaining effective work and social relationships. So if you have those types of symptoms, that's probably going to fit you in the 50% category. Now, on the other hand, 10% says you'll get rated at 10% if you have things like occupational and social impairment due to mild or transient symptoms which decrease work efficiency and ability to perform occupational tasks only during periods of significant stress, or symptoms that are controlled by continuous medication. So there's a difference there. So if you're able to perform your job on a day-to-day basis, except for during periods of significant stress, and your buddy is having panic attacks several times a week, then you're probably rated correctly in that scenario. All right, so I want to circle back to the VSOs for a minute. The VA does recommend that you work with a VSO or accredited veterans representative to assist you with your claim versus a non-accredited organization. There are people and organizations who can legally represent you in your claim with the VA who work for these VSOs and accredited organizations. These people have been through specialized training to help veterans navigate the VA's processes. And hopefully this means that they can break things down for you if you have trouble understanding what you need to do. So these people can help you understand and even apply for your benefits. They can help you gather supporting documents such as your doctor's reports or medical test results. They can file a claim or appeal on your behalf and even help with things like transportation to your appointments. If you aren't sure whether or not you can handle putting the documentation for your claim together on your own, reach out to one of these organizations. Generally, they won't charge you any fees for your initial application, unless there are some unusual expenses that go along with it. If you have an unusual case and there's things that they need to have out-of-pocket expenses for, they may charge you some fees for that. But be sure to talk to them about any fees that might come up through the process, though, so you're aware of how they work. However, after the VA has made a decision about your original claim, they can charge you for their services if there are any other claims. So you might dispute a claim or need some help, some other kind of help from them. If you want them to represent you, be sure to you are clear about what fees they charge. Some may not charge anything, but you want to be clear on all of that stuff beforehand. There are also other non-recognized organizations that I mentioned briefly earlier, and these people do offer services to veterans to help get a higher rating. And almost all of these charge a fee to the veteran, and in most cases they charge fees if the veteran sees an increase in their rating. Just as an example, one of these organizations I saw advertised that they charge 50% of the monthly increase that they get you for the first 6 months after that increase goes into effect. So if you're getting $1,000 per month right now, and then you go to them, ask for help, and they get you bumped up to $2,000 per month, they're going to charge you 50% of the difference. So the difference is $1,000. They're going to charge you half of that, so $500 per month for the next 6 months. I know, more math, right? I'm done with the math. But there's, just to clarify the math a little bit with that, if you're rated at 10% and you think you should be rated much higher, like 70 or 80%, I definitely wouldn't suggest working with one of these companies. 10% is only around $140 a month, and 70% is around $1,400 per month. That's over a $1,200 difference, which would cost you around $600 per month for 6 months to pay to these organizations. Like, that's a significant amount of money to be spending out. I think you'd be better off trying to get the increase on your own at that point. Now, if you are already rated at 70% and you think you should be rated at 80%, a small bump in the increase, that's only about a $200 difference per month. So in that case, you'd be charged around $100 per month for 6 months. That's not quite so bad. All of these companies charge different rates. So you know, this is just one company that's out there that I happen to see the rate. Some of them don't list their rates, so I don't even know what they charge. But before you reach out to them to have them help you, definitely figure out what the rates are, get that in writing, and know what it is. I'm just using this one company's fees that I saw online as an example, so definitely do your homework, figure out what they all charge before you jump in on any of this. Now, I know some people might think that it seems like these companies are exploiting veterans, and I get that, but this is their job, so them charging a fee for it is not so outrageous, I don't think. Some of these companies are even owned by vets who struggled their way through the process themselves at one point in time, and they managed to figure out how to help other vets through this process. And if they offered their services for free, they probably wouldn't be able to keep a roof over their head or put food on their table and provide for their family. So I get the fees. It's a job, it's a business just like any other. I don't think I would use their service personally, just because I managed to figure this stuff out on my own. But I don't think that they're all bad either. So I'm not bad mouthing them. I just think that there's a time and place for them, and big increases are probably not that time or place. I'm sure that there are some bad companies out there too that are predatory, and they're going after veterans and they're targeting them and trying to swindle them out of some money. So again, do your homework if you want to work with any of them, just so you know what you're getting yourself into. I guess my point about all this, though, is that there are a lot of VSOs and accredited organizations out there who do the work for free. So if you need help, see how well they'll work for you first before trying one of these non-recognized organizations. The VA does have a website that you can specifically look up accredited organizations and VSOs that can help you with this stuff. So that way you know that you're finding someone who is going to not charge exorbitant fees for you, hopefully. Okay, I think the last thing I want to talk about with all of this is how long it takes for your claim to be processed. I think the best answer to this is your results may vary, and it depends. I know that's kind of a non-answer answer, but that's about as accurate as it can be. My first claim, in my experience, my first claim was filed in August of 2019, and it didn't get approved until February of 2020, so that's about 6 months. My second claim was filed in late October of 2020, and it was approved in mid-November of 2020. So I really don't know why one took 6 months and the other took just a few weeks. Maybe it was because of the type of claim, you know, what it was for, or maybe one had more complete documentation than the other. Honestly, I wish I knew. I have no idea, though. Anyway, that's all I have for this week. Key takeaways with VA benefits are to file your intent to file as soon as possible. That way you get that back pay when eventually your claim does get approved, hopefully, if it gets approved. Get all your records in order, and if you're still in service, get everything documented. I hope this helps. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to the Drive On Podcast. If you want to check out more episodes or learn more about the show, you can visit our website, driveonpodcast.com, or on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Drive On Podcast.